It's Sunday morning. I'm wearing pajamas, so you know what that means.
It's time to get busy.
Yes, and it's time for the Sucks Podcast. I'm your host, Brad.
And this is Dave.
And with us, as always, is producer Joe. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
This, of course, is a podcast where we talk about design, intentional and otherwise, and all the ways that UX,
user experience design,
impact us every day. We are lovers, not experts.
Lascivious lovers.
And we started this podcast as a way to talk about why things were made the way they are and where those design decisions might have gone off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
Too much?
A little bit. Yeah, wait, somebody needs to mention that I just made up a word.
Lascivious. Well, I don't even know what you. I don't even know what you said.
I don't know. I said licentious, lascivious, salacious, salacious.
You did not say either salacious or salacious.
I didn't. I was going to, but you know what happened, guys?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, why am I always using an S word? Because it was sweet lovers, and then I try to mix it up. I don't even know why this is a thing. Why is this a thing? Because probably because Brad says a thing, he does a thing. I got nothing to do, so I got to be stupid. Mm-hmm. But I figured we'd go with alliteration, right? Mm-hmm. With lovers.
You got to have a thing. You can't be one thinged up.
Yeah, okay, I can't be one thinged up, Brad. All right, Joe. I can't.
All right. So we've gone through the alliteration dictionary of S's, and we're moving on to L's. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's okay. Right. It's like Sesame Street, Brad. Right?
This podcast is almost exactly like Sesame Street.
It's absolutely like, you know.
This episode is brought to you by the letter L.
Yeah, for a licentious.
I was about to bust into like some weirdo Elmo impersonation and talk about UX as Elmo, but I thought that would be way too weird even for this podcast.
Oh, I kind of want to hear it now, Brad. Please do it.
Mr. David, what is a user journey?
Well, Elmo, I'm glad you asked. We're going to talk about that on today's podcast. Are you excited?
What's a persona?
Please don't use that. It's too weird.
You are one. You are one, Elmo.
Okay, so, fellas, we're breaking format a bit with today's episode. Is that cool?
Yeah. Are we? Wait, how?
Well, our usual banter... I figured we should key up what this episode is actually about, because this is kind of what we'd be bantering about anyway.
Yeah, I think we already bantered, Brad.
Okay, yeah, there was like 5 minutes of me doing Elmo impersonations. Hopefully you cut that down to nothing.
Yeah, don't worry, Brad. It's all gone.
Okay, thank God. All right, users. The idea for this episode came when Dave wanted to go see a random oldies band.
Not an oldies band.
And I'm not really into oldies or nursing home type music, but sure, why not? The deal was that we were all going to go to Santa Barbara to see this band, which is fine. A day in Santa Barbara sounds great anytime. What was the band, Dave? It was Bill Haley in the Comets, Tommy James and the Chantels. Which one?
All
was
of those.
It?
It was a festival of all of those. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Starlight vocal band.
Uh-huh. No, it's freaking Nine Inch Nails, man. I dare you to tell Trent Reznor he's an oldies band. God damn it.
He'd would probably love be the opportunity to tell Trent Reznor that he's an oldies band, and I'm sure he'd appreciate it.
Well, you probably won't get your chance, because that's what this episode's about. Mm-hmm. Not getting your chance to see the band.
By the way, a little non sequitur. I find that people like Trent Reznor have zero sense of humor about this kind of thing. About anything that you want to tell them that might be clever.
Really? I don't know. I think he comes off pretty funny.
Does he? I'm not so sure. All right. Well, anyway, joking aside, Nine Inch Nails, I mean, it's not really an oldies band, but, you know, Nine Inch Nails is a band that I would have seen when I was a teenager. And I think at least one of you has seen Nine Inch Nails as a teenager, right?
I've been seeing Nine Inch Nails every other year since I've been a teenager, and Joe can attest to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and Joe, you saw them as a teenager, I think.
I did. I saw them with Marilyn Manson and Jim Rose Circus.
Yes. 94, 95. Yes. Madison Square Garden. Is that where you saw them?
Yeah.
That was
Philadelphia Spectrum. I think yeah. I stole the Spectrum then.
Okay, that makes sense because you're West Jersey. Yeah, for those that don't know, the Jim Rose Circus freak show. It's just like a freak show. It was cool. It was weird. Not really my scene. I think the whole Marilyn Manson, Jim Rose, that's kind of like, I mean, darker, emo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that was a great fucking show. I saw it two nights in a row. I walked through Manhattan, slept at some random person's house, and then went to the show the next day with someone else.
I think Jim Rose Circus has a residency at the Mirage now.
They're really? Still around?
No, is that a joke?
So for the win.
Almost believable.
You know who's getting a residency? You too. Is getting a residency at in Vegas, which makes sense. I don't know
how because they're an oldies bad now.
But I don't know how they haven't had a residency like 20 years ago. It seems like their thing.
It seems honestly like it might be too late for them to have a residency at this point.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna see.
All right. Anyway,
residency in Branson, Missouri, that kind of thing. Yeah. At this point.
What's the place that we did an advertisement for? Delaware.
Hartley, Delaware.
Absolutely. I love you, Hartley.
And weren't we invited to go to a convention in Hartley, Delaware? I mean, isn't this like real?
We were. That's a real thing.
Yes.
Not a bit at all.
Not a bit. Why did we do that? We totally should. I mean,
I was thinking about what a mistake it was not to do that like 2 days ago.
Yeah, we totally should.
That was my call, and I'll take responsibility for it.
Well, you know what it was, though? It was virtual. If it was in person, we totally would have went.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I don't know what we're going to talk about. I don't know what our value add was. I appreciate it. I was honored, but I was like, why us?
Yeah.
Anyway,
Brad? So we wanted to buy Nine Inch Nails tickets. Dave, this is your idea. I was hoping you could walk us through our user journey because we had a hell of a journey trying to get tickets.
Absolutely. And this isn't isolated to this buying these tickets. I mean, this is the experience we have every single time. Most times we buy tickets. So, all right, let's go back in the Wayback Machine. Let's take us back to 2 weeks ago?
I feel younger.
I feel younger, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brad, you shaved. What happened? No goatee. So here we are. I find out through Nine Inch Nails Instagram that they're going to add a show. To the concert that we've been trying to get, which by the way is not, there's no new music. I don't know why they're having a concert now and why I'm going.
A tour.
But a tour. Sorry. Yeah. So this tour we're trying to get in, I get word that they're gonna do a pre-sale. And I'm like, cool. And I'm already signed up, but I sign up again anyway. I think it tells me that I'm signed up. So I get the thing in my actually I just
Typical
went right to my
fan pre-sale, right? Like that's the thing.
Fan pre-sale, yeah. Right. So which we're gonna find out is not as great as you think it is, but so I go in, I look at my email, I get the password or whatever it is. Still here, I think it was.
I remember because I had to type it in about 80 times.
Yes. Yeah. We go.
Well, the thing was, you also had to register for the pre-sale to register to buy. It was like multi steps just to get there.
Well, not necessarily. You had to. Who's telling the story, Joe?
Sorry.
You had to be a part of the whole like BF, like what they used to call it back in the day. You'd write the artist and you'd be on their
fan club.
Yeah, you had to be in the fan club. It feels fun to say fan club. So you had to be in the fan club. You get the thing. So then you go to AXS, which doesn't roll off the tongue, tickets. So
I was going to say it's Axis tickets because they're evil.
Oh, Axis. I get it. Okay. Yeah. I was like, AXS, that's a terrible brand. You can't even say it.
Allies tickets, huh?
Yeah.
That's right.
And exactly. We'll get to that when we get to my solution, Brad. So you wait in line. You're sitting here. And then it's actually that user experience is pretty nice. It made me feel like I'm like actually went to like I'm waiting in line. Like it's like your place in line is coming up. So that was cool.
That virtual ticket line.
That's a good-ish experience. So then you get there and there's a little countdown and it's like, and here's a nice thing. I will give them props for this. I was at work as we all were. And I don't know if you guys heard this, but there's like a chime, right? When it's your turn, it's like, and it's like, oh shit. And you just switch the window. And you go to buy the tickets, and what happened, guys? Instantly, what happened? Well, first of all,
I think that you might have skipped a step, and that the artist presale code did not work.
Or is that what I was about to say? That's what I was teeing up. Yeah. So go ahead.
The code didn't work. So yeah. The whole point while we were there is like we had this, you know, fan club code that would allow us to buy tickets early. Code just straight up didn't work.
Yep. So we spent a good 5 minutes trying to get it to work. And I guess they finally figured it out. And I verified with all three of you that it wasn't working. Yep. Looked on Twitter. Yes. People were complaining it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. It finally started working. And then what happened, Brad? Because you were the one that got in.
Okay. Well, in a nutshell, they only released a very small number of tickets for this artist presale, and none of them were the tickets that we wanted. So, Dave, you were really specific that you wanted general admission floor tickets. You know, you didn't want to be seated at a Nine Inch Nails show. You wanted to be on the floor. Right. I understand that.
Yes.
So none of those tickets were even an option for us to buy that day. Yeah, yeah. We didn't know that before we went through this, you know, this hour experiment, but that's what had happened. Right.
Yeah. So, and just for those that don't know, Nine Inch Nails is a show you go to be active. It's a tribal experience. You're moshing, crowd surfing, bouncing around. You don't go sit down.
I will tell you that I just threw up in my mouth a little bit when you said it's a tribal experience.
It's a tribal experience, man. Why did you throw up in your mouth? I mean, it's a communal experience. Is that better? Like you're
because your tribe in this case is 45-year-old white dudes.
No, that's not true, Red. That's not true. When we went to Vegas, Joe, there were young people there. And remember, my complaint was they're all standing around watching Nine Inch Nails. And I'm like, you don't. This is an atrocity. So I looked at the biggest guy in the room, and I gave him eyes, right? Like you give eyes to like a lady, you know. Back in the day, I'm married, but you know, you single guys know you get the eyes, and something clicks, right? And he and I clicked, different, same, but different, and. Instantly, this guy just throws me into another human being, and then I just jump into him, and then all of a sudden, it's 1993 again, and like the whole place is moshing, even though there's signs "Screw you, Vegas" that say no moshing. And then I had security following me around because they know I kind of started it, and I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud that my old ass started a mosh pit at Nine Inch Nails, and I will do it again, Brad. So. You better tame that hair. You better tie it back, brother, because it's happening.
I think you better continue on with our user journey because that was only day one. This is a 3-day ordeal.
Sorry, this was a good user journey. Let's get back to the bad user journey. Bad user journey is we look at Joe noticed this on Axis that there's another presale coming up the next day, and it's a quote unquote local presale. I don't know what the hell that means. Yeah, we had to sit here and go, wait, do we have to live in Santa Barbara? Like. What it would do is it Southern California? And it was never clear. They just let us in.
Yeah.
So we go ahead and we do it again. And I don't know what there's to say here. It was the same experience, right? Except there was no code this time. And instantly when we got in, and we got in pretty quick. It wasn't like, I don't know about you guys, but it wasn't like a 3-minute wait, a 2-minute wait. I think it was pretty, for me, it was pretty instantaneous. And there was no tickets like that we wanted.
So this was interesting, right? Because the tickets changed, the availability changed minute to minute to minute to minute. So we were looking for, again, these really specific tickets for GA floors, seats, right? Mm-hmm. Those weren't available at 10:01 a.m. And then at 10:11, they were.
What?
So
wait,
it was very
the GA
strange.
Tickets were available and you didn't get them?
At some point during that morning, they were available. And here's why I didn't buy them. Because I could either get 2 or 4.
Okay, well, clearly you should have gotten one from me and you.
Neither of them were at face value. So this is a part of what we're talking about.
Okay, so it was already marked up.
Face value tickets were supposed to be like, do you remember? Like $117.
Like $80 to $129.
They weren't $130. So even though I'm buying directly from AXS.com, not a secondary market, even though I'm buying directly from the venue, on time, pre-sale, all that stuff, they weren't face value tickets. They were over $200. I think they were $250 each. And I could either buy 2 or 4. There's 3 of us. We don't have
a 4th. Weird. Well, clearly you should have got an extra ticket or just left Joe home. Sorry, Joe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I remember that because you said it would be like if you bought them right now, they'd be over $1,000. We're like, that's not worth that.
After fees and all that, which we'll get into. It
was you sure that wasn't on Ticketmaster Day? This was on the Access Day?
Yep.
Interesting. Okay, I forgot about that because so much was happening.
I know.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So let's skip to the next day. So we're like, fuck it. Screw it. So we had theories. We're like, okay, maybe there's only a certain amount of those tickets. Maybe the general admission is it's a hot ticket. So, you know, because like I said, it is a it's an AARP trial experience. And, you know, maybe they're saving those for, you know, the general sale. Okay. That was our theory. So we go in. We go to Ticketmaster. Well, I did this. I don't know if you guys did this, but I had Access open on one window. Mm-hmm. I had Ticketmaster open on my phone, and I was.
This is on day three for the general sale, right?
Day three for the general sale.
Speaking of Access, AXS and Ticketmaster are both a part of the Access.
Yeah, they are. Right?
This is very much Germany and Japan.
Yeah, and the allies are who? Like Pearl Jam. What's her name?
Bruce Springsteen and the consumers.
Anymore, but we'll get into that.
Right. Okay. So anyway, so long story short. As soon as you get into Ticketmaster right away, Access, I don't remember what happened there because I'd given up on trying with them. But I think I got in and it was the same thing. There was no general admission tickets. Ticketmaster, however, general admissions were available for starting at $350 and going all the way up to thousands of dollars. And I was like, how is this? How are they reselling this stuff instantly? Mm-hmm. It just went on sale. Mm-hmm. And so we just didn't buy anything. We just were like, okay, well, I'm not spending $350 a ticket
to see an oldies group.
It was very maddening. We were left very upset. We did not complete our user journey. but you know, it's great. I mean, Nine Inch Nails is the perfect music to listen to in this situation. It's very anti, very ragey. So, you know, maybe it's on purpose. Maybe it's on brand.
Fast forward, what we decided to do is not go to that Santa Barbara show. They are playing at a festival in Los Angeles. I forget what it's called, but we opted to go.
Primavera Fest. Primavera Sound.
Primavera Sound Fest. So for all of our users who want to meet up with us, we're going to be there.
Yes.
Nine Inch Nails is playing on Saturday, and we bought festival tickets. Now, just to put a bookmark in the festival thing, I think festivals are going to be a garbage experience, and I expect this to be miserable. we'll get into that later in a future episode.
We're kind of split on this, and I'll just bookmark it as well. Joe likes his festivals. He goes to all the deserty things, and Brad and I have this opinion. So it'll be nice to talk about festivals, user experience at festivals. Yeah, stay tuned, users.
And hopefully I'm wrong.
Yeah. I mean, you'll be right and wrong.
I'm sure.
We'll make it. We'll have a great time regardless. So,
all right. So that was our user journey setting up this experience in this episode. So, Dave, hopefully you can cut that down to like 4 minutes because I'm not sure that any of that was entertaining at all.
Yeah. No, it's all entertaining, Brad.
But before we go much further, Dave, you are bringing us a new segment today. You want to say that?
Yeah. Yeah. You would like to start cue it up?
Cue it up.
It's the cool shit. It's the cool shit. It's the cool shit.
It's old people telling you what's cool.
I like it.
Wow. Oh,
let's see if that works.
All right. New segment. What the hell is this, Dave?
Well, you know, Brad, I'm glad you asked. unprompted. Because the news, I don't know that we were qualified so much to talk about the news. And a lot of times it just was us like opining and rambling and ranting about things and getting on our soapboxes. Like, I don't know.
I think what you're describing applies to our entire podcast.
It does. It does. Except we are qualified to talk about things that piss us off, like apps and things like sidewalks, you know. but this, I thought, is also newsy, right? Cool shit. It's the cool shit. The cool shit is stuff that we have stumbled upon that we think is cool, that we think is like going to make the world a better or more interesting place. Now, interesting could be dystopian, as we may get into, but it's cool. Either way, it's cool. So I'm going to jump into our first topic, okay, which is artificial muscle shirts.
What is an artificial muscle shirt? Let me just paint the picture here. I'm assuming that it's like a t-shirt that I buy at the Orange County Fair that has like airbrushed muscles on it, or like a bikini bod, which, you know, like what I'm wearing right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, Brad, it can be that, but woven into that Orange County Fair muscle shirt is tiny little muscles or artificial muscles, right? Think of like a elongated like tube that is hydraulically controlled, right? Mm-hmm. So it's pumping water through here. There's some electricity. I don't understand the
probably
science.
Probably able to constrict and retract like a muscle fiber. Mm-hmm.
And these things can shape shift into 3D structures.
Okay.
In the article I was reading, they have like a butterfly that they can actually control the wings and whatnot, like a flower. They can make it turn into a flower. What are the uses of this, right?
Right.
Can be a little scary. I stumbled upon the word soft robotics. Like, I was like, well, what's that? And pretty much that's like humanoid robotics. Like, they can do, like, it's like instead of just having a hard robot arm that's like, I am a robot, it would be like, it would be like our arm and fingers and act that way.
This is the first step towards Westworld.
It is. It legitimately is, because so right now these fibers, they have them. I don't know if that's the right word. Right now they're small-ish, right? Mm-hmm. But the engineers at the University of South Wales in Sydney, Australia, are the ones who have developed this smart textile shape-shifting, muscle tees. They have these fibers down, or these tubes or whatever they call them, down to like 0.5 millimeters, which is super small, right? But they want to get it down to 0.1. So these people are making it smaller. And then also these fibers in the past, these fake muscles, weren't able to be woven. These folks have made it so small that they can actually weave it into t-shirts and cool. Yeah, like jackets and whatnot like that. And also this will help people who have like
mobility issues.
Right. So it's like, so this is, I'd like to say. That's good.
Cool. That's really cool, man. I hadn't heard of that before.
Yeah. So what do you guys got? You guys, I asked every one of you to bring something. So who wants to go next?
All right. Well, I'll make mine quick. So we all know that climate change is a problem. Now, we have carbon capture devices, or they're in the works, but the problem is you need to power those, which is like almost counterintuitive. Like, you need use fossil fuels to create something to take fossil fuels out of the air. So put a pin in that. We also know how like EVs and hybrid cars work. When they break, you capture the energy from the brakes to power it back to the battery. Now, trains can do that too, but trains do it 1,000 times over. What you could do is take one of the train cars and make it a carbon capture device that is powered by that regenerative braking, so that so that power is not going to waste, and you're powering something that's cleaning the air as it goes. So as trains are traveling hundreds of thousands of miles across the country, they're cleaning the air as they go without using power to run the devices. All they're doing is capturing the energy that the train is already making.
Got it.
So you're using energy that would have gone to waste to power something that's also cleaning the air at the same time as it goes.
Hey, Joe, do you know what that is? Do you know what that is, guys? Brad?
Cool shit!
That's some cool shit, Joe. And what I'm excited about is, like, I can imagine, like, if they can do that now-ish with trains, if they are able to shrink the technology, you can imagine a future where maybe that exists on every car.
Right. Or trucks. Right. Big trucks that go around, Yeah. Right. There's some cool shit. So, Brad,
like, what if cars aren't carbon neutral, but they're carbon negative? They're actually removing the emissions from the environment.
That's great. Mm-hmm.
This is why I like this segment, guy, because this is all user experience. This is the human user experience.
Right.
It's all good stuff. Brad, what do you got?
All right. Well, what I've got this week is The Line in Saudi Arabia. What this is, it's a new hypothetical imagined city of the future. And I love this shit. I love this kind
of
stuff.
This is cool shit.
This is like a carbon neutral city of the future that was announced, or I don't know what to call it, announced, we'll call it, by Mohammed bin Salman from Saudi Arabia, that noted champion of human rights. So what this is basically, it is an imagined city of the future where instead of a skyscraper sticking up straight into the sky, it's a very, very long, almost 100 miles long, eighth of a mile wide city. That is built on equitable design, clean energy, and user experience. So it's pretty cool. Basically, the idea is that, it's this long thing. It has solar panels that collect energy, self-sustaining agriculture, and stuff like that, with end-to-end travel across 100 miles.
Taking like 20 minutes, right?
20 minutes.
Yeah.
No cars. All of your basic resources are within a 5-minute walk. And if you want to go from one end to the other, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
All in like these like tube Musk style transports.
Right.
So I think that's pretty cool. And anyone who's read sci-fi novels knows how this ends, but it's pretty to imagine it. It's pretty to imagine it without being pessimistic,
Right. Speaking of sci-fi, it's like a, was it not a Dyson sphere? What do they call it? A Bishop's ring. It's they have these cities that are like circular, and they're like it's essentially that on Earth. Mm-hmm. So I think it's you know what it is, Brad. You know what it is.
Cool shit.
It's cool shit.
I love this. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, it was good. We did it. We did a new segment, and that's our episode.
Well, actually, no. Why don't we take a quick break, and then we're going to do a much deeper dive on Ticketmaster and AXS and all those. Sound good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Warning. This commercial includes language not intended for young audiences and is a work of parody under the Fair Use Clause codified in Section 107 of the Copyright Act.
David,
I know you're a married person, right?
Yeah, Brad.
Okay. So I know you, I know your wife. This ad isn't going to be for you, but for a great deal of the population, especially coming out of a pandemic, people are looking for personal, intimate connections, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you talking about,
you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
We have to keep this PG for ad reads, of course. But let me be honest here. All right. And you're going to have to do some editing here. People need a good every now and then, right?
Whoa. Agreed. But watch yourself, counselor.
Okay. And if you are really looking for a good, you want simple, intuitive navigation. You want clear-cut 17 through 100% fees on every transaction. And you want to get this from one of the most hated companies in America.
Is this the part where you get us sued?
Ticketmaster.com is your go-to for when you just really want to get.
I do not endorse this clear and obvious work of parody.
All right. Let's say that you want to buy a concert ticket and it has a list price of $130. But let's say you're also feeling a little lonely, a little amorous,
licentious even.
You really want those tickets, sure. But you're also just looking for a good old fashioned. Ticketmaster is the place for you.
Wow,
would you
Brad?
Agree, counselor?
Dave? Yeah, Brad.
So go to Ticketmaster.com and use the promo code for an extra 30% added on top of your face value ticket fees, on top of the 30 to 110% fees that they're already charging you now. Ticketmaster.com, the place for when you're looking to get boned. And we are back with a public apology. I want to apologize to the Ticketmaster Corporation. To my family, to my constituents, of course, for that that misguided ad read. I've been mandated by the courts to apologize, and I beg your forgiveness.
And just so we're clear, so there's no confusion, that was 100% written by Mr. Bradley Combs.
Very late at night. And sanctioned and signed off by producer Joe and Dave Walsh.
Agreed. Hey man, we're gonna walk you back from this. We like a good train wreck. It's good stuff, man. Good user experience for me.
Okay, so today we are all in on Ticketmaster. Now, we're using Ticketmaster as a proxy for really all online ticket sales, notably AXS. We've been calling it AXS. Dave, Joe, I'm not sure what you guys think, but I think that we're probably going to go a little bit softer on some of the third-party sites like StubHub, SeatGeek, stuff like that. Why? Yeah. Well, because I think that they have a more honest value proposition. They didn't create this, but they, you know, Ticketmaster and companies like them continue to allow this sin, but they're creating this ecosystem of inefficiency. And I think that the blame lies with Ticketmaster and AXS, which we're going to get into.
Yep. Let's do it.
Right.
All right. So let's go back in time. Joe, Dave, what was the first concert you can remember buying tickets for? And how did you buy them?
Wow. Well, I can't remember buying the first tickets. That's because it's not a pleasant experience, you know?
Right.
You're on hold, you're on the phone, you're online. I can remember the first concert I went to. I didn't buy the tickets. Totally off topic, but...
What's that?
Daryl Hall and John Oates. Big Bam Boom Tour.
Dude, I would go to that today.
Well, I'm embarrassed by it, but clearly most people I tell aren't. It was my uncle. My uncle liked them. And I went. That was my first concert. But
Hall & Oates are legit. They're great.
Okay. Well, then I feel redeemed.
Let me throw two words out, see if it rings a bell. Ticketron and Teletron.
Mm-hmm. Ticketron does sound familiar. What was Ticketron?
Yeah. It's like we had a call and redial and order tickets on the phone.
Yeah. And it was a worse user experience than the web, because there was, I think you just got a busy signal, right, Joe?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Honestly, my first concert, ironically, was actually Nine Inch Nails. I mean, my first real concert at a place where you'd buy tickets for, because I would go to a lot of local punk rock shows, VFWs, fire halls, $5 at the door, see local, you know, the local kids with, guitar, drum set. And but that was my first real concert, the one we referenced earlier in the show.
And how'd you buy it?
I honestly don't even remember how we got
there. Yeah, I don't remember.
I do not remember.
Yeah. And by the way, Joe, that would have been me. I would have been playing those venues when I was a teenager.
Nice.
I played Fisherman's Halls, VFWs, church basements, all that stuff. It was it was pretty wild.
Awesome. And the only way you'd know about the next show is you had to go and get a flyer to find out where.
Did you hand out your CDs, Brad? Did you hand out your tapes, your mixtapes?
They would have been CDs at that time, but we didn't. I think we didn't really have that kind of sophistication. I was in one group that had one single.
Okay. All right. So you said you remember your first ticket buying experience. Tell us about it, Brad.
I do remember. So this is going to age me, and it's going to make me seem pretty lame. But here was what the show was. It was Toad the Wet Sprocket.
I like Toad. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I still kind of like Toad. Toad's pretty fun.
All right.
They were on a bill with Hootie and the Blowfish. And by the way, Hootie and the Blowfish, they were really good.
Oh, really? Okay.
This was before they got big or whatever, but yeah. I remember that show. Toad was great, and I will stand by that. They were great. But we walked out talking about this new band that nobody had ever heard of. Hootie and the Blowfish.
That's awesome.
whatever. Whatever. I'm not going to apologize for it. They were good. Am I a fan? No. Anyway, so let's get it back on track.
Yeah.
So here's how I bought tickets. Now, I lived in a rural town, farm town, Middletown, Ohio, and we had to drive to the sort of the city, outside of Cincinnati, and go to a department store.
Oh, wow.
And they had a Ticketmaster counter.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We had to go. We had to wait in line, and we had to wait in line and get up to the counter. And we bought our tickets. We paid cash money. I'm sure the tickets were probably about $15, with no fees. And then we had our tickets, and it was a fine experience. I do remember trying to do the Ticketron stuff for other shows and it being awful, but that's what it was for me.
So you actually went and physically stood in line. I've done that too. I don't have any specific memories, but I do remember going to a place and standing in line. I'll tell you what, that's a better user experience, I think. I mean, what we've read in our research is there's some really bad user experience there about systems not working and it taking forever and people camping out for days, weeks even for shows. But for me, it was just, there was kind of a tribal, if you will, communal experience to going and standing there with everybody with their concert t-shirts on and nerding out about the band. You don't get that now. Yeah.
I think there was this understanding back then, if you were in line and you were in a good enough position that you were going to get tickets.
Right.
That was part of the value prop. It's okay, I'm in line, but that means I'm getting tickets. So that has gone away. And I'm sure we'll be talking about that. But all right. So that's our personal experience buying tickets. Let's get into the actual history of ticket buying. Dave, take it away.
Oh, I was texting. Sorry.
Keep that in. Double it.
Yeah. All right, guys. So, no, I was actually asking my friend Dion, who's hilarious, by the way. We should have him on the pod at some point. If he has any funny ticket buying experiences back in the day, because I went to a ton of shows with him and bars and stuff. So, it just instantly made me think of him because he would have a memory of this. Anyway, so I'm not going to go, originally, guys, when I thought about this history of ticket buying, I was like, yeah, we got to tell him about it. It's interesting. I'm not that interested anymore. So,
It goes back to the Roman days.
I'll sum it up pretty quickly because there's a lot of bullet points to read here. I'm not ready for this. It's too early. So basically, assigning exclusivity to different socioeconomic classes, it was a thing even way back then. They only had so many seats. The Colosseum had numbers on them. They had sections and they had seats. So the interesting thing is they used to use anything to be a ticket. Pottery shards as tickets. Those are called tessera. Mm-hmm. Anybody who wants to, learn something new. Now let's fast forward. The first sport in the United States, do you guys know what it might be that ticketing was a thing?
I have a guess.
Horse racing?
Exactly, horse racing, Joe. And you know what? I don't know the difference between this, but there's horse racing and harness racing, right?
Yeah, I can add some value here. Okay. So horse racing is when you sit on the horse, and for a long time that was deemed like scandalous. Ooh, okay. That you would watch men on a horse galloping around.
Interesting.
So harness racing, I think, is when they were pulled on carts, like these little buggy.
Yeah, like chariots?
Like chariot racing, yeah.
Yes.
Weird. Okay. Okay.
And that was considered more appropriate.
Like everything, when Brad says something, we just take it at face value. We don't fact check it.
As
so.
You should. Don't fact check me on any of that.
He sounds so convincing. I'm going to go with it. Mm-hmm. Okay. The earliest known racetrack was in, I almost said Coney Island, but that's not right, Long Island, as early as 1665. And then harness racing was popular by the mid-1850s, and it was the leading spectator sport in America. And then baseball, like leading up to the Civil War, that's the first admission to a baseball game was in 1857. And the earliest known ticket to a baseball game is housed in the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum in Cooperstown, New York. And guess what ticket that's from, guys?
Los Angeles Dodgers.
It is not the Los Angeles Dodgers because it's this pre-Civil War.
Montreal Expos.
The Cincinnati Red Stockings game played at the Union Grounds, also known as Lincoln Park Grounds in Cincinnati, Ohio, Brad.
Barry Larkin.
The admission to the game was 50 cents, and now, you know, the rest of my research just goes into like sporting events and stuff like that. It's not really pertinent, whatever. But anyway, this has been around for a while. People have been ticketing from the beginning of time, and you know, in Roman times they used to do it by social class, I'm pretty sure. And it was like you know the groundlings got in you know, at the bottom, and then, you know, the more important people.
I get it.
Yeah, see? And the irony, Brad, is groundlings, and, you know, we talked about this beforehand with Joe, I think I was talking to. I didn't get it either. But now I'm like, it's ironic that we're trying to get a groundling ticket, and those are thousands of dollars to the Nine Inch Nails show.
Meanwhile, tickets to the groundlings on Melrose, readily available.
You can pick those up easy.
I've never gone. I want to go. Should I go?
Okay.
Is it fun?
You want to go see the pros. You don't want to go to like the training shows.
Okay.
They're really bad and very painful.
All right. This is what we're going to do, guys.
Yeah.
We've always trying to find things to hang out. It's usually a movie. We're going to go see the Groundlings. I'm on the website now. We're going to buy tickets.
Guys, I hate improv.
Was it crazy Uncle Joe show on Sundays?
I hate it too, but maybe we'll get up there. Maybe we'll fucking do just jump on. Here's what we do. We jump on the stage and we just start doing improv. And they're like, they think it's part of the show. And they're like all confused. And afterwards they call us assholes. But the audience loved it.
Yeah.
And then
unless you're one of like the top five people in the country at it, it's going to be pretty bad.
Right. But we're going to be great. And we're going to plug our pod. This is a plan. Look for us at the Groundlings uninvited on stage.
Perfect. Okay. Fast forward. Now we're into the 1900s and 1980s, and Ticketmaster is now a thing. And for some reason, I'm not really sure of the history of how this happened, but they started making these deals with venues, exclusivity deals, meaning that if you're a big venue and you're selling through Ticketmaster, you can't sell elsewhere.
Boo.
This causes all sorts of problems. I'm not really sure how that was allowed to happen, but it was. In the 1990s, you guys will remember, if you're of a certain age, Pearl Jam versus Ticketmaster.
Yep.
So Pearl Jam was really railing against Ticketmaster's fees, and you know what they wanted to do was they wanted to sell tickets for $18, which was still more money than what they would like to have charged back then, but that was a reasonable price. They couldn't sell tickets for $18, and when they did, Ticketmaster had all these fees. And what Pearl Jam was really protesting is that they couldn't find venues on their own outside of Ticketmaster. They had no alternative. So their complaint, which they took to the house, was that Ticketmaster was a monopoly. And in fact, for, you know, history buffs and film history buffs, I think this is analogous to blind booking. Is that what it was, Joe?
Yes. Yeah, that's analogous. So MGM Studios would own MGM Theaters, and the pipeline would just be like our films and our theaters. And
it would just, which is the same thing that was happening back then, and the same thing that happens today.
Yes.
So that was the Pearl Jam thing. They were supported by Aerosmith, by Garth Brooks, REM, Neil Young. You know, artists of the day. But Pearl Jam was not successful.
Yep.
Can we pause here, guys, to talk about something during this time that was going on that ties into the larger topic and what we'll get to? Scalpers. Remember scalpers? Scalpers used to be illegal. Like, I remember you couldn't take your ticket and then go stand out in front of the concert and go, oh, I can't go to this show. You want to buy these for face value or maybe a little scratch more? Couldn't do that. You get arrested.
Well, by the way, you can still get arrested. That's still
It's still on the books. Okay. Is it?
It is. I won't scalping jump ahead. Tickets. We're jumping ahead a little bit, but we have the secondary marketplace, which is legal, and scalpers use cases. I have an extra ticket. I'm trying to sell it at the venue. Totally illegal.
Yeah.
You will get fined $1,000 and maybe thrown in jail for doing that, which is so ironic compared to, you know, with how the secondary market works and how predatory it is.
Don't jump ahead. Okay. Yeah. I want to put that in there.
Okay. So that's the 90s. Scalpers. Right. That's a thing. And then the internet happens and it is promptly abused by bots. Can one of you walk us through the bots?
So the first guy who invented ticket bots, Penn Lawson. And he got busted. He got busted. They didn't get him on anything. For some reason, the law, they couldn't get him on anything. But he did do this back from 2001 to 2010. Yeah. So I guess 2001 is when it first started. And how bots work, guys, I got a little infographic here. I'll try to explain it the best I can.
Good.
Prior to on sale, they create accounts. And this is key because think about when you get on, there's all these things you have to do, right? So you get in line. Mm-hmm. You got to create an account. You got to put in your information. They autofill all that shit. So they're already two steps ahead of you in the purchasing process, right? So it's like, bam, everything's done. Like you don't have to, even though Ticketmaster gives you that 4-minute window countdown, they're in and out done. And they do this a thousandfold. They have them, you know, they're bots. Sure. Another thing they do is account takeovers. So they'll go in and say, I'm not buying a ticket that day. They'll go and take Dave's account, Ticketmaster somehow, and then buy tickets through me. Yeah, that's a thing. I don't know how they do it.
People who are unawares?
Unawares. They also simulate as many, like many users during the on sale wait. So I guess they're kind of clogging it up.
On purpose.
There's, you know, credit card fraud is another thing during the ticket purchase.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of nefarious things they do. But
well, you're talking about some of those things are crimes, but a lot of them aren't.
They are basically expediting buying all these tickets. So they're flooding that market, taking all the tickets, and then they go and they resell them. So what we experienced, we are just being outgunned, right?
We're competing against bots, for sure.
We're competing against bots.
I think people understand that. I think like ordinary people understand that.
I didn't understand that until we started talking about this. I didn't know bots. I knew bots was a thing, but I never thought that it was this big in the ticket world. I mean, duh. Yeah. Right. But I just didn't think about it. Yeah.
One thing that I learned about the bots and, you know, there's all these countermeasures that, you know, Ticketmaster is ostensibly trying to put in place to combat bots. Here's the thing. They have no incentive to combat against bots. They have every incentive to continue to allow this to continue to happen. Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, because they make money. Yeah. We'll get into it. Right?
We'll get into the reasons why. But like, don't believe anything that they're trying to combat this as a problem. Mm-hmm. They have no interest at all in making this a better experience for you, the user, which is why they're one of the most hated companies in America. One thing that I did learn that was new, the CAPTCHA, that's a specific, you know, thing that they put into place to try and stop bots. Now, here's how the bots are actually getting past those CAPTCHA things. It's a bifold system. So you got the bots, completely AI driven, but they might have a farm in some other country that is doing the CAPTCHA. And the two are connected.
Like
so,
Brad, like actual people who they're paying to type in the stuff.
Being paid a very small amount to sit there, and that's what they do all day long.
They're being paid to see Hootie and the Blowfish. They get tickets to see Hootie and the Blowfish.
I mean, I can picture it. It's a data entry job, right? Yeah. That's how it's positioned in the marketplace. And they go and they sit in a chair, and this is what they do. They enter
grim
CAPTCHA fields all day long. Can you imagine?
So if I can just kind of paint a picture of what these bots and this guy Ken has accomplished.
Yeah, please.
They bought in 2007, this is from their FBI indictment. In 2007, they bought more than 11,700 Bruce Springsteen tickets worth about $1.3 million, as well as nearly 2,000 tickets to the New York Yankee playoffs and nearly 12,000 tickets to a Miley Cyrus concerts. Like they said that they dominated 90% of ticket sales in America. 90%.
90%. And honestly, it's probably more than that now.
It's crazy. Well,
this was just this one guy, you're saying.
And I don't know if Ticketmaster was doing their thing at this point, because now that would be Ticketmaster. But anyway,
I don't think that they were doing that. But what they realize as an output of that lawsuit, of this guy's work, is that they realize that they have to start doing this themselves. And that's where they opened up their own secondary market, their verified resellers, and they became essentially their own scalpers in about 2018.
Yeah.
This is a brilliant move because it lets them sell tickets at a much higher price, a much, much higher price than listen value. And I don't think that's even where they make the real money. I think that where they make the real money is double dipping on those convenience and service charge fees.
Exactly.
Multiple times. Every time a ticket changes hands, they collect a service charge and fee, which is why there's no incentive for them to try and stop this from happening. Because they're making $30, $50, you know, $70 every time a ticket is sold. Right. Not just that first time, but if it might sell five times.
By doing nothing, by just allowing it to be on a marketplace that, you know, again, we're doing the work and they're just getting the service fee for doing absolutely no service.
I would say even worse.
Every time.
They're doing this by turning a blind eye. That is the action that they're taking. They're turning a blind eye to predatory practices that existed before Ticketmaster, and now they're taking advantage of it more fully. No good, very bad. How about that?
Yeah.
And that's our episode. No, I'm kidding.
And guys, so the interesting thing about this is the guy, his lawyer, this guy Ken, his lawyer argued that they weren't hacking the site. He wasn't doing anything wrong. The bots were going through the same ticket buying process as a human, except faster. So ultimately, he stayed out of jail. And the other argument he made was that, hey, you know what? The amount of tickets that I'm actually getting is a drop in the bucket compared to what's happening from the inside. And I know we're going to get to that, but 70-80% of your scalp tickets are bought from the inside. Mm-hmm. Think about that.
And by the inside, you could be talking about artists, you could be talking about credit card companies, and you can be talking about Ticketmaster.
That's right. Here, let me give you an example, Brad. Yeah. 2006, I know it's a long time ago, this is an old article, but 2006 Rose Bowl, the stadium had 100,000 seats. Guess how many went on sale to the public? Take a guess.
100,000.
Nope. Guess again.
Okay. 90,000.
Keep guessing.
88,000.
Not even warm. Not even tepid.
Okay. 97,000.
1,000 tickets went on sale to the public.
1%. 1% of tickets actually went on sale to the public. And what happened to the rest of them?
The rest of them were taken by bots. There's so three tickets went on sale to the public after the bots got them.
Well, actually, I think that that's a pretty good analogy. And your three number, I don't think is that far off.
Right.
I really don't. Right. Like when you're waiting in a queue to get like tickets, when they like we did when we were trying to get Nine Inch Nails tickets, I do think that we were competing over like 25 tickets.
Probably. I mean, probably.
This Santa Barbara Bowl is not a big venue, you know? I mean, it could have literally been 25 tickets that were released on that Nine Inch Nails presale day. Okay, why don't we go on to some bullet points of the pain points and complaints against Ticketmaster?
Absolutely.
And then we'll get into some solutions, because we don't want to just complain. We actually do have some solutions. So here's some bullet points. You guys should add on to them. I'll start, and we'll go maybe round robin. Fees. Just general blanket fees. They're not standardized and they're completely variable for what you're going to pay of what these fees are. Sometimes the fees are 30%. Sometimes the fees are 110%. Use case that I read about is you're trying to buy inexpensive concert tickets, Monster Truck Rally, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tickets are $15. Your convenience fees, $20. More than the cost of the ticket. Okay, so that's a big one.
Yeah, like Access. They wanted to give us a – wasn't there like – oh, no, there's the other one when we bought the festival. Didn't they gave us a convenience fee or some process fee, and then they charged us to mail the tickets. It's like, well, what was that other fee
yes,
for?
Yes, exactly.
That sucked. We had to pay $10 to get the
tickets. I didn't even want you to mail it. I want you to put it on my phone. What am I doing? What am I doing with something I can lose? Why?
Yeah. Also, in case our users don't know, this is the year 2022, and they're mailing us tickets in the mail. They're charging us.
Well, we did go back in time.
Mandatory.
We did go back in time twice in this episode, so maybe it's not. Maybe it's not.
Joe, you want to take one of them?
One of the things that people should know is that Live Nation is a concert promoter. That, you know, they're the ones that put on the shows. They're the ones that hire the venue. They make most of the decisions. They're actually are they owned by Ticketmaster? I think they are. I think they're like now, they used to be in cahoots. I think they're now one company. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk about a monopoly.
Yeah. A monopoly for sure.
Somebody in Congress was paid off. Yeah.
Well,
and Brad, you already mentioned this one. I'll throw it out there. But most venues have an exclusive contract with Ticketmaster. Which is shitty, right? Because you can't introduce an alternative to this nightmare, which I will do later, despite this.
Yeah, I'll go to another one. And just to recap what we've already kind of, you know, said, less than 25% of tickets at all times are actually released to the general public. Like, yep. You know, we gave a specific use case for like 1% for the Rose Bowl, but that's not just for the Rose Bowl. As an aggregate, it's way less than 25% that are actually released to the public. And sometimes it's far, far less. The rest are held for Ticketmaster, just charging premium variable pricing, which we'll get into. Credit card companies, you know, American Express has pre-sale for some of these concerts.
Radio stations.
Radio station, whatever. You know,
band. What did you tell me about Justin Bieber?
Justin Bieber. Dictated for Madison Square Garden that he had like an inordinate amount of tickets held for him, right?
Yeah.
And wouldn't you know it, wouldn't you be shocked to learn that those tickets then were sold for $2,000 each?
Wait, so his friends didn't go to see their own friend?
Justin Bieber doesn't have any friends. No, we're not talking about 5 tickets. We're not talking about 20 tickets. We're talking about hundreds or thousands of tickets held for the artist, for him to do whatever he wants. And what he does is he sells them for $2,000.
Boo to the Biebs. I'm no longer a believer, guys. Mm-hmm. I'm no longer a believer. I'm out.
There is a premium level of tickets. So like in my use case, I was looking for Lizzo tickets last night, and Lizzo is playing in Los Angeles at SoFi, which is a great venue. So face value tickets are available in the upper wing. So if I wanted to pay $80 for a ticket plus fees, I could do that. If I wanted good seats, though, those are premium tickets. And what that means is that these are, quote unquote, they're supposed to be face value tickets, but face value doesn't mean anything anymore. That is a concept that no longer exists.
Right.
So Ticketmaster will sell me a premium ticket, and those prices are variable.
Yeah.
And they're upfront about that, to their credit. That means sometimes the tickets could be,
it's based on
quote
demand.
Unquote face value.
Yeah.
But never.
Based on demand.
1,000% based on demand.
And it's inflated demand. It's artificial demand because of these freaking the things they do.
Absolutely.
And by the way, guys, can I just say, at least premium tickets in that situation, Lizzo, is you're getting better seats, right?
Yeah.
I think the funny thing for the festival we're going to is it said they had tiers, and it was tier one was sold out, and tier two was like, it was only like $10 more, but it was still more. Yeah. And it said, and then there's a little footnote that said, the only difference between tiers is the cost. It's like, what?
I can expound on that a little bit. I mean, I've seen that before with like Coachella tickets, which is very similar to what we did with, but it's 1,000 times worse. Like you log in like hours in advance, and the little guy walks across the screen. There's a line. And when you get to actually buying the tickets, you know, it used to be you'd get early bird tickets. Like, oh, I'll buy them like a month in advance. I'll get, you know, a discount of $20. Now it's like those mere seconds we're talking about with the bots. Like if you manage to get a ticket within the first 5 seconds, you'll get it for tier one for say $130. If you're not in that first 30 seconds, you're now in the tier two, which is, you know, $15 more than and by the time you log in, you're already at tier three. Like I don't even know where there's tier one and tier two.
So they do the same thing. So it's this, Joe, it's the same thing. It's just the price difference is the tier. Well, why?
Just the
price. What is that? Like, why am I being penalized for not being able to get through your system in time?
Like, what? That's all I can think of. That's all it is.
Like what?
Like I'm saying, it's not early bird. Like I'm buying it weeks in advance. I'm not buying it in the first 5 seconds. I got to wait till like I'm penalized because I'm in 15 seconds later or something.
You know what it is? I think it's basically the laws of supply and demand on crack, right? Yeah. It's like hyper supply and demand. It's like, oh, everybody wants these tickets. So now the price is going up. It's going up. It's going up. It's ridiculous.
Well, they have this whole system and ecosystem that they've created to artificially inflate demand. So that's the part that is inequitable, right? They're creating this problem and then profiting from it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's no one going to that Nine Inch Nails show but the three of us.
15 other geriatric people and...
And Trent Reznor's wife, maybe. Right. Maybe. And his kids. That's it.
Look, this system is designed to be opaque and confusing. Yep. And it is not designed to help you buy tickets. It's designed to help you not buy tickets, and then you have to pay more money through a secondary market or from Ticketmaster or AXS themselves. Right? That is the design of the system on purpose. Which is bad UX. We're talking about dark patterns. Holy shit.
It's the worst.
Or what's the false availability or
false scarcity?
False scarcity. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Just to make it more confusing, like, you know, these Lizzo tickets, you know, I was looking for like floor tickets and they're, you know, I can still buy them today through Ticketmaster. $260, which is not face value. I can buy them on StubHub today for $190.
Guys, this is grim. This is sad. This is depressing. But are we here yet? How do we fix it?
Okay. Let's talk about how we fix it. Well, okay, first, let's not kid ourselves that this problem is going to go away. The market is being manipulated by Ticketmaster and others, no question. But look, people are still paying these crazy prices at the end of the day. I don't think that these venues are sitting unsold. Yeah. So capitalism is not going to stop this. This is, I mean, if you look at it through the lens of Ticketmaster, this is supply and demand. It's just market manipulated supply and demand.
Exactly.
So if people wanted to stop paying $300 to go see Lizzo, they would. But people are willing to pay these prices. So that's a complexity for sure. So the macro problem is what it is, but there are some microeconomic solutions that we could get into.
Okay. So what do we do?
Well, support smaller artists, smaller venues. Mm-hmm. Go to live music. Right. Go to music that isn't at the stadiums, you know?
Okay. Okay. I like that. Yeah.
That's one.
We should do that. And we'll see the groundlings. And the next thing we have to do is we have to walk the walk. If we're going to talk the talk, we need to go see a small band.
All right.
In a small venue. We're going to do it, guys. We'll let you know how it was.
Walk down Sunset on a Tuesday night and just pop into the Viper Room and see who's playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So here's the other solution. Don't kid yourself on how much these tickets are going to cost.
Yeah.
Just, you know, be rich. You're like, mm-hmm. rich people are the ones who drive up these costs. Let's get it straight. For sure. None of us is going to pay $10,000 to see Bruce Springsteen. Mm-hmm. But some rich asshole is going to sit there and go, oh, fuck it. It's only $10,000. It's the boss. I got to go hear him talk about the working man.
Right. Here's the thing. It's like my favorite quote. The best things in life are free. And the second best cost a metric fuck ton of money. That's just what it is.
True. Who said that?
It is true.
I did. It was adapted from Coco Chanel.
Ah, good. Good. I love it. Give me more stuff. What else we got? Solutions.
All right. I do have another solution. Do you guys want to go first?
I got the big solution. I got the real solution. So I'm just waiting to get through these bullets to tell you how we solve this.
Okay. Well, I have a practical solution, and that is to bank on last minute unsold tickets through your StubHubs, et cetera. And the gambit here is that there will be unsold tickets, or there are actually real people who can't go to the show and are trying to offload their tickets at the last minute. So as an exercise last night, I took a look at what music was happening in Los Angeles, and I wanted to see like how much I could actually get a ticket for last minute.
Okay. Okay.
John Fogerty was playing at the Hollywood Bowl. Huge oldies act. Why is John Fogerty playing at the Hollywood Bowl? Anyway, here nor there. I was able to get great seats for under face value about 10 minutes before the showtime.
Okay.
I'm talking box seats for $150, right?
Wow.
That's under face value for box seats at the Hollywood Bowl. Or if you're not 75 years old, Leon Bridges, who was more my speed, was playing at the Forum.
Okay.
And I could get good tickets for $40. Again, about 10 minutes before showtime.
Now, let me ask you, did you try to buy them days in advance to see how much the prices were then?
No.
Okay. Because that would be a better exercise. But under face value is a good metric to buy.
Under face value. Yeah.
But we don't know whether the demand was there previously. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I like this, and you're not the first person to tell me this, but I've tried it before and not had that success with bigger artists. So we should try it before that. Whenever Nails is in a venue like the Las Vegas show,
we
should try it the night of.
I actually have a hypothesis too. Like, what if they're trying to penalize like real people from doing this? Because I've also tried to sell tickets day of that I couldn't use under face value, and got nothing.
Wow,
for sold out shows.
Interesting.
And I wonder if this is the StubHubs and the Ticketmasters of the world trying to prevent me from doing it.
Maybe we should try it. Okay.
Dave, what do you got?
All right, here's what I got. There's some other bullets, but I think we need to skip to the chase here because I have the solution. I have the only solution. Okay. And I know you guys have poo-pooed this idea.
Yeah, get ready.
But I'm going to pitch it to our users. Pitch it to our users because this is key, and there are people who can do this, and there's money to be made. Okay, the answer is a killer app, a Ticketmaster killer. Okay, you got to take them down, and you got to do it through tech, right? Here's my idea. You create an app, and all it takes is one artist, right? One Lizzo, one Harry Styles, one Billie Eilish, somebody current, somebody with some sway to sign up with these folks, right? So here's my killer app. Basically, it's end-to-end encryption, okay? Everything is pre-filled, right? So I tell you like weeks before what I want. I want GA tickets. That's all. I want four of them. Here's my credit card information. Here's my face verification. When you go into the app, you just thumb it or they take a picture of your face or something so you know it's a person, right? And this company has to be built on making it equitable. They have to, they're the good guys. So their brand would be the good guys. And Ticketmaster is evil, right? And this would be what they do. And they would do all this stuff. So when you get in line, and this is awesome. Here's an even better idea. You could have integration with Meta or the Metaverse or anybody who's doing this. Apple's doing their thing. And basically, you can virtually get in line, you know, put on your glasses and talk to other people. Talk to people in line while you're standing in line. It's pretty cool, huh?
Pass.
Right? Cool shit. And then – no. Okay, pass for you. Pass for you, but you're not in your 20s. People might think that's kind of fun. I would think it's fun to sit there and talk to other people in line about the show. Anyway, so all this stuff is pre-filled. So basically the bots have no advantage in my system, right?
Okay.
And you get there. And then plus the other thing that this killer app does.
What's to prevent the bots from pre-filling
a bunch of stuff? I was going to say, the other thing the killer app does is 100% bot-proof. And I don't know how you do that. I don't know what the tech is. Maybe it's the end-to-end encryption. Maybe it's the facial verification. Maybe it's the biometrics, whatever. There's no way that the bots can crack the system. Okay. So you go in.
Minor details.
You make these and you limit the amount of the sales to, you know, to other parties before scraping it off the top. You do a bunch of good things so that fans can actually get tickets. And you have to partner with a big name who's into this type of shit. Back in the day, it would have been Pearl Jam. They would have eaten this up. Mm-hmm. And then it goes well. And then every fan is like, I got my tickets. The first time in forever, I haven't paid $400 to get, you know, right next to the stage, blah, blah, blah. And it's a great experience. And then they suddenly take over the market and they win. That's the solution. Give me the angel investor. Give me the money. Buy me the first stock. Thank you. You're welcome. Solved.
Shall we tell you why that's not going to work?
I know why, Brad, but tell us.
Venues being exclusive is the thing. You can't get the venues, Dave. You can't get the venues. That's the problem.
I know you can't get in, so you have to make those deals. You have to be a savvy business investor, and that's why I say you partner with a Lizzo, you partner with a Billie Eilish, and you go to find like maybe the smaller venues. Maybe Billie Eilish says, I'm not playing Madison Square Garden and, you know, Dodger Stadium or whatever. I'm going to do twice the amount of shows in these smaller venues that are not owned by Ticketmaster, and then you get Harry Styles to do it. You get fucking, you know, Lizzo to do, you get all these people to do it. And suddenly it's like, oh, fuck, we have to rethink our partnership with Ticketmaster. Like, everything's possible, guys. You can't just say, oh, no, a behemoth exists. Oh, no, Hitler is taking over the world. We can't defeat him.
I was going to say that that's a bridge too far, but actually I don't think it is.
Right? Right?
I don't see it.
And we're the allies, remember? That's the name of the company, Allies.
Right.
If Axis is the bad guys, the Axis of Evil, Ticketmaster, Axis, StubHub, we are the allies. AllyTickets.com. Brad, do the ad read. Go to AllyTickets.com for 0% off. You do it better. God damn it. All right. Fuck it. That's the solution. Okay. That's our show.
All right. So be honest about what you want to pay for tickets. Go to smaller venues. Use StubHub last minute or create your own damn app and start your own venues.
Allies Tickets.
All right. Proposing. That's what we can do.
Yeah. I like it, guys. I think we solved it as we usually do.
We fixed it. Let's move on to some unicorn moments. Moments of UX Zen. Shall we?
Okay. We're doing that this week. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Season 2. We didn't do it last week. I've got one. All right. I have one. I'll go ahead and start. And this is also kind of a shameless plug. My daughter has been learning how to make and edit videos, and I'm super proud of her. Like, she's figuring out how to do all this stuff. She's 8 years old, and, you know, she's learning how to edit, which is awesome. And YouTube also makes it pretty easy for her to upload videos, and I'm really proud of her stuff, which you can check out at The Clem Life.
Okay.
The Clem Life on YouTube. Check it out.
Nice.
You can subscribe.
I love it.
Now, we're going to do a whole episode on kids content and media, and we'll get into, you know, some of the pitfalls of this type of content soon. But in the meantime, check out Clem Life. We've disabled comments, so and we're pretty strict on what we can and cannot say on camera.
Smart move.
Cool. Awesome. I love it. I love it. I got one real quick, guys. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it while I was here. One, I would say, actually, I have two. I'm going to do two real fast. One is an iron. Okay. My unicorn is I've had an iron since college. So we're talking decades. I don't know why I've had the same iron and I've complained about it for at least a decade. I bought a new one. This thing, before I even get it down onto the shirt, has gotten rid of the wrinkles with the steam, guys. So here my point to people is, if you have old shit, buy new shit. I'm a blue collar guy, but it's in my blood. So for those of you who know what I'm talking about, like, these guys are laughing at me, maybe not so much Joe, Brett, definitely. But there are those among us who have the same shit for decades, buy new shit. It
can I helps. Can I yes and you on this one?
Yes and.
If you had bought a decent iron 20 years ago, you wouldn't have to buy a new iron. Buy good stuff. Yeah. Replace it less often.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Here's my other one. I'm going to take two because I never have a unicorn moment. I'm always complaining. The other thing is this fucking filter in Zoom. Okay. I know this is an old thing. Everybody knows about this already, but I'm super attracted to myself right now. I don't look like this. Like, you go into Teams, you go to a Teams meeting and it looks like somebody beat the shit out of me at the end of a concert and I haven't showered yet. And it's just, it's terrible. But Zoom is like, look at this. It's like
I look 5 years older on Google Meet than I do on Zoom. True story.
Nice. And you got to ask a question. Why are they not catching up? Like, why is Teams like, oh, we should do that?
Or Google Meet? Maybe it's a bad idea.
Oh, it's a great idea.
Maybe we should not, like, misrepresent how we look on camera.
No, because you want to feel good in a meeting, Brad. Look at this. Look how much funnier and nicer and talented I am today.
Okay. And that is our episode.
I have a unicorn.
Okay, Joe. Sorry.
Go ahead, Joe. Go ahead.
Well, okay. So a couple years ago, I switched from Sling to Hulu. I think that's kind of where the market's headed. One of the things that Hulu didn't have a good partnership was Comedy Central. You could get like the Daily Show if you had the live thing. But, you know, if you wanted to actually use the cart or the comedy, I'm sorry, did I say Cartoon? Comedy Central. If you want to use their actual like proprietary app, when you turn it on, it would ask you to like link to a cable subscription, you know, Comcast, Spectrum. Ew. And I always thought that was dumb. I'm like, that did just totally against the whole cord cutting thing. And I know why they're doing it. A couple weeks ago, and this might be old, I might have missed it, but I went to go use the Comedy Central app. And one of those was now Hulu. So if you have a Hulu subscription, it now counts as like that login through your subscriber. And you can use the Comedy Central app. Like, yeah, I thought that was really nice. You know, the market kind of coming around to being realistic.
And you get to laugh. You get to laugh.
Yeah.
Laughing is good.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Sucks Podcast. Please remember to like and subscribe. Drop us a line if you have a topic or if you want to be a guest. And we are wishing you all a well-designed life, good health, and good experiences.